The Old Testament is the first half of the Bible. New Testament is the second half of the Bible, of course, the half that we are under today, and we are still talking about the Old Testament. You will remember Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, the book of Genesis, the creation and so forth. God's people went into Egyptian bondage for about four centuries. Finally, they are ready to leave Egypt, and then they, once they exit that country, are able to go out and wander in the wilderness for a while. They begin to get a law from God, and eventually they end up in the Promised Land. He mentions, as far as lesson five, the flight from Egypt. We left the children of Israel in our last lesson or study. They were about to leave Egypt to begin 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. Now, I put down here a cross-reference, Isaiah chapter 16, verse 14. You have a minute to get there, but I would like to have that read in a couple minutes. Somebody want to head over there and have that ready in a bit? Isaiah chapter 16, verse 14. All right, Bonnie. Now, when you think about Israel, 400 years can be a substantial period of time, but here you have a situation, they're going to, kind of shortly into their new set of environment as far as exiting Egypt. Things are going to change and change in a hurry. We recognize that today, don't we? That things can change in a hurry. For us, it can be just like that. You're in an accident and all of a sudden your life has changed. Do you think things can change quickly in a nation? You might be at peace today, but tomorrow there's war. And that's literally happened overnight. Well, here's what God says as far as a Bible illustration about change. Let's look at Isaiah 16, verse 14. Bonnie?
But now the Lord hath spoken, saying, within 3 years, as the years of a hireling, and the glory of Moab, shall be contemned, and the with all that great multitude, and the remnant shall be very small and feeble.
Okay, Moab felt like it was great on top of the world. And God said, how long is it going to take before things change? Just 3 years. Now, change can come quickly, as far as faster than that. But so when we look at here, 40 years, what can happen in 40 years?
A
whole new generation can arise. And that's really what we see in the Bible. So Scripture makes it very clear. It does not take that long for things to change in 40 years, which we'll say more about a little later. It's certainly a sufficient period of time for many things to happen. He also references the 10 plagues and noted how after the plagues, Pharaoh decided to let the people depart or go. Before leaving, though, they ate a final feast. What was that called? The Passover. We've been talking about that some on Sunday evenings. There was that special festival, became an annual celebration, and then they began their march out of Egypt. How many men? 600,000, the males. And then, of course, you have the women, you have the kids. You can find that in the book of Exodus. And that would be Exodus chapter 12, verse 37, if you want to cross-reference. So they come to the Red Sea, and then what happens? Cross the Red Sea, and then they... Well, I'm sorry. I want to run some references here. They come to the Red Sea, and what happens? You've got the sea in front of them. You've got Pharaoh's army behind them, and they start whining and grumbling. And that becomes a constant, regular complaint among the Israelites. Well, there's this, there's that. They start looking back to the safety that they had in Egypt. They start looking back at the leeks and the food that they had back there in Egypt and those kinds of things. And I jotted down some passages here which I think, in even our time, are helpful to consider because people today continue to look back. Let's look at some of these references. Some of them will be really familiar. Others should at least be minimally familiar. I get four or five helpers here. Who wants to take Genesis 19, verse 26 first? Lois, Genesis 19, 26. From the book of Philippians, let's look at the third chapter, Philippians 3, verse 13, Betty, Philippians 3, 13. Then Luke chapter 9, verse 62. Luke 9, verse 62. All right, Maxine's going to take that, and then 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 21 and 22. 2 Peter 2, 21 and 22. All right, Kenneth, 2 Peter 2, 21 and 22. Let's start with a Genesis 19 reference, verse 26.
But his wife, from behind him, looked back, and she became a pillar of salt.
Okay. Here, it's time for Lot's family to leave the area of Sodom and Gomorrah. What was the command? You leave and you
don't look back.
Well, Lot's wife obviously failed to do that. Philippians 3, verse 13. Okay, was Paul interested in looking back?
Yes.
No, he said, I reach forward. I'm focused on the things that are in the future. Luke 9, verse 62.
But Jesus said to him, no one having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God.
Okay. Looking back in God's sight a problem or not? Yeah, God says you start looking back, you're not fit for the kingdom of God. That's pretty serious. But there are some reasons for that, some obvious reasons, and God says you just don't want to go there. And then 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 21 and 22.
For it had been better for them not to have known the way of righteousness than after they had known it to turn to from the holy commandment delivered unto them. But it has happened unto them, according to the true proverb, the dog has turned to its own vomit again, and the sow was washed.
Thank you. One of the problems with looking back is what? You look back, you may want to go back, and you actually may make that choice. So God says, do not do that. And he gives us some examples of people who have looked back. We find that same kind of thing today. If you look at people who have gone through some very difficult times, they sometimes will look back to that old life and the old friends. Well, this brought me to jail, this brought me to prison, but still, that's what I'm familiar with, that's how I know how to make a living, so I'm going to go back to that old way of life. And God says, you've been cleaned up spiritually. You're living a new life. You've been, you know, raised with Christ. And you just don't go back to those former associates and the former habits. And the people who do, it is a big, big problem. Anything that you want to add or ask before we pick up with Stan?
Just a question. Didn't the Restoration Fathers look back?
Well, you always have examples that you would look back on. And that's a good point for clarification. When we think about looking back, we're talking about the sinful past, things that you wouldn't want to go back and resume. But we do want to look back in the sense that there are some positive examples. And you can look back and find some negative examples as well, but I think here the looking back is also associated with going back and returning. So, yes, mentally there can be some things that are helpful, but as far as turning directions, that would kind of be the reverse of repentance. No, we don't want to do that. So,
well, Paul admonished them to maintain the traditions that mm-hmm. he had taught them.
Right.
And that's basically what the Restoration Movement was. So
yes.
Going back and picking up that which they had failed to maintain, essentially.
Yeah, there does have to need to be that positive recollection or remembrance. Don, did you have a thought, too?
Well, it's along the same line. Actually, you could have used don't go back. Would have been more clear to us, but then look back. Because we always look back.
Right. You know, we can say that wasn't good, so I'm going to stay here. So you do have those recollections, but the idea in the reading that Kenneth had from Peter makes that really plain, and that was one of the reasons why I think that needed to be read, that you have the dog returning to its own vomit.
Well, I think you're talking about like Lot's wife. She looked back longingly.
Yeah.
Looked back. That's the kind of looking back. I look back. I miss that.
Yes.
That's the kind of looking
yeah.
back.
And there, whether or not you're actually going back and involving yourself in it again, or your heart is still stuck there, you really come out to the same place. And that's the problem. That mind, remember Romans 12, you know, be transformed, the renewing of your mind. So the actions plus the mental attitude, both of those things have to shift. And if you are, you know, back there either mentally or materially, as far as the physical things that you're doing, you have a problem. So yes, glad that we were able to make those points. Chris? There are a lot of ways that we can apply it, and that would be another one. Right?
As a plow, and if you look back when you're plowing, you will see the, all the crooked lines, but even more than that, you won't see yourself turning astray at that particular time,
mm-hmm.
but you will go with it, the way your eyes are looking or not looking.
Yeah, and I think that brings to mind a helpful illustration. You know, if you're driving down the road, what happens if you're rubbernecking, looking back there at the accident or the fire? Yeah. Yeah, off the road you go, and it usually doesn't take very long. And the same thing is true mentally. What if you're thinking about mentally what you just passed? Oh, I wonder if anybody's hurt, and I wonder if the place is going to burn down. And, you know, you're so focused on the past that you don't see the semi in front of you, and you crash. So, yes, a lot of ways to make application of that. Okay, after the reference to the 600,000 men plus the families, looking back, he says, to their dismay. And when you look back in the book of Exodus, chapters 14, verse 6, you find that God's people, the text says, they were sore afraid. So the word dismay is not an overstatement of things. To their dismay, they saw that Pharaoh had changed his mind and had sent his army. Now, if you remember from the biblical account, did Pharaoh just stay there on the throne in Egypt and send his guys out? No. Where is Pharaoh? All right. He goes out there with the group. He leading the charge, if you will. So it's not just the choice chariots and the fellows who were responsible for them went out after the Hebrew people. So he, his army, they go out trying to bring the people back into bondage. Seeing the distress, God instructed Moses to stretch forth his hand over the sea because God's people were really stuck. There was nowhere that they could go, sea being in front of them. And then, of course, Pharaoh and his army being behind them. They were the pursuers. And he did so. The water divided, and Israel marched through on dry ground with water on both sides. Then he references here 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 2. He says, Paul says they were also under a cloud, in that they were all baptized unto Moses. Literally, in the Greek text, that says baptized into Moses. And that's a passage which I think some people have not always grasped, maybe the fullest sense of what's involved there. I do want to run a passage by you in connection with this. You'll have, again, a couple minutes to get there. It's from the book of Exodus, chapter 14, verse 31. Is there somebody that wants to take a look at that for us in a bit? Exodus 14, verse 31. All right, Bonnie's going to get that in a minute. Now, the writer makes the point, and I'm not uncomfortable with this, but I'm not sure that it is really the primary point. He says, you know, you've got the people surrounded, if you will. You've got the water on both sides and so forth, nothing overhead. From what's said in the biblical account. But people have tried to use this passage in 1 Corinthians 10 as well as back in the book of Exodus to say that baptism is an immersion. Well, that's certainly true, but I think a better way to prove that might be from Romans 6, verse 4, and Colossians 2, verse 12. In my mind, and I studied this out fairly carefully a few years ago, and I think the conclusion that I'm going to suggest is correct, especially based on Exodus 14, verse 31. There was a difference as far as Israel's relationship with Moses before the Red Sea experience when you compare it with after the Red Sea experience. Now, let's look at that verse, Exodus 14, verse 31.
And Israel saw that great work which the Lord did upon the Egyptians, and the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses.
Okay, notice that. After they get through the Red Sea, then what's said? The people, the Israelites, they
feared.
Okay, and they also believed who? All right, they believed in Moses, and they also believed in God. Well, didn't they believe in Moses before? Wouldn't you have to have some faith in Moses before you have him lead you out of, Egypt?
Maybe
yeah?
Complete.
Yeah. It's like today. A person says, well, I knew that. Maybe intellectually because we learned it in a book. And then now we actually do it. We feel it. We see it. We've created it. And now we say, now I know it. There's a difference.
Like the apostles, right up until the time of Christ's death, they believed in him,
yeah.
But not fully.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got some shakiness and some uncertainty. It's like, 95% faith. But after the resurrection and everything, we're in it for 100%. So there is this kind of change. So when they say baptize unto Moses, I think that expression is saying that they were fully joined. They were fully on board, whereas before, not quite so much. Now think about the parallel. Baptized unto Moses, today we're baptized into Christ. And if the parallel is a true parallel, what does that suggest? When it comes to our relationship with Christ, we are fully on board. What about looking back? Money, family, fame, power, threats. If we've been baptized under Christ, what do we say? Throw at me what you want to throw. And what's my choice going to be? Fear not them that are able to destroy the body, but fear him rather who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Matthew 10 verses 28 through 30. So it really was an amazing thing for Israel and their parallels for us today. He mentions this was a type of baptism coming by Christ. And again, I think that's true, but I'm not sure that he grasped the full point. But that may be beyond the scope of the lesson. All right, before we talk about Israel forgetting God, anything that you want to add or ask? Okay. Don, I'm sorry. I missed the hand.
You're talking about the apostles and everything, but they just went through 10 plagues, didn't they? They were God's hand.
Okay. You said apostles and plagues.
Well, Ray said apostles. I'm talking about the Israelites.
Okay.
And that was very frequent, recent.
Yeah.
10 plagues happened, and that was by God's hand.
Yeah.
So within, I don't know, a few days, they forget.
Yeah. And he's going to actually, you know, we're going to talk about that a little bit more, but you're right. And it is just almost beyond comprehension. The people could see that, especially the 10th, where even Pharaoh himself says, get out. You know, it's early in the morning. You know, you got the death of the firstborn at midnight, and Pharaoh, you know, has Moses and Aaron come, and, you know, it's just, you guys got to go. And, you know, how Israel could just, and then going through the Red Sea, and how they could turn so quickly, but we're going to say more about that in just a second. He says the Egyptians tried to follow Israel, and we know how the story went, that chariot wheels come off and so forth. The Israelites were able to get through the other side without difficulty. Moses stretches forth his hand once more. The sea closed up and destroyed the Egyptians. So now, bondage, more than 400 years have taken place as far as that captivity in Egypt. And now, finally, the Hebrew people are free. Now, you might think that when the Hebrews had come through all that, that now they're free, the shackles have been thrown off, how would they have responded? And this kind of goes to what Don was talking about a moment ago. All right, they should rejoice. Well, as you look at the book of Exodus, do you remember what happens after the people get through the sea? Well, before that, you're right. They sang. Exodus chapter 15, verses 1 through 21. You know, you've got all kinds of singing and joyful activity. But how long is it? And I'm not speaking literally. Long time, short time is the answer that I'm thinking of. How long before they began to go down the same road? The murmuring, the complaining, and forgetting about the great deliverance. It's very short. Very, very brief, which Don mentioned correctly a few moments ago. So for several weeks, they begin to march. They go southeast to the desert, and then it is during this time that they begin to murmur. They begin to complain against Moses. And chief complaints would be what? All right, food and water. I looked at this a couple of years ago. I've got the data, but they talked about several boxcars. I'm thinking, if memory serves me correctly, I didn't think to look at this before, but they would have needed the equivalent of several hundred boxcars filled with water every single day. Now, remember, you've got 600,000 men, you've got kids, and you've got women out there. If you want to bathe, if you want to do dishes, probably if you want to cook, you want to clean your utensils, I mean, you know, you've got at least 1 million people, maybe 2 million people, and they need water every single day. That's a lot of water, isn't it?
You have livestock also.
Yeah, you've got the livestock too that's going to need water. So you start throwing in, well, there's this and there's that, and oh, by the way, it's kind of like a municipality. Well, we need some tax money for this and that, and you think that everything has been taken care of as far as the budget. Oh, look, we forgot about this. And you just kind of start scratching your head. So you can see, I think, from the standpoint of the people, where are we going to get water? You know, this is a basic part of life. This is an essential thing that we need. Where is it going to come from? And then if you get water, there's the question then of food. You know, you're out here in a desert area, and where are we possibly going to get food for all these people? Well, if you're Moses, can you imagine how he must have felt? You know, bad enough if you got 5 or 6 people that want to come and complain to you. At work or in the home or in the neighborhood, you got somebody that's always on your case. But can you imagine 1 million-plus people all with the same complaint? And they are looking at you. That would not have been a very attractive job.
So do you think was God just naturally going to provide all this for them? Or was he waiting for them to start?
He had to have had a plan to take care of them. I think there was a test of faith there on their part. And this is based on human nature rather than biblical citations. But when you think about people, do you not find that folks today, and the fair is a great illustration of this, do you not find that people will sometimes make decisions without thinking things through very well?
Yeah.
All right. if you have, for example, the Hebrews, they're being told, you're going to be able to leave Egypt. People being people, I suspect that probably the majority would have thought, oh great, we're going to be free. They may not have thought about what? Once we get out there, we're going to need water. We're not going to have access to the Nile River anymore. Where are we going to get water? And where are we going to get food? And some other things. Now, there may have been some people that thought about that a little bit. But sometimes people talk about living for the moment. We recognize that, don't we? And that may have been true for this. You know, people today, you have the folks, 4th of July, wasn't that long ago. And people will go out there, they get all kinds of fireworks. Bang, pop, fizz. And then what do they create? A mess. Well, they don't think about the mess. It's just the fun. We had so much fun. And then you go out the next day and you see all the trash. So people throughout time, I'm going to say the majority of people are so often caught up in just the moment of things that they just don't. And you've got all the miracles taking place as well that had occurred plus the tent. So they may not have given much thought to that. Maybe they just kind of half thought that God's going to provide. But once you get out there and you need water and there's no obvious well and the belly starts getting hungry, you know, that really begins to kind of test the faith, and you start thinking, as the people did, you know, look at how we had things back in Egypt.
Yep. Scriptures tell us that it was 3 days before they murmured about water. So evidently,
yeah,
if they thought of water, it was not a large amount.
Yeah.
But it tells us for food that it was the 15th day of the second month after they left Egypt. So evidently they thought of enough food to get them through at least 4 or 5 weeks before they started.
Yeah, and people will usually pack some provisions. Now, what happens after the provisions run out? Well, that's kind of a different story. But you will find sometimes some short-term planning like that. But people are generally kind of caught up, you know, let's grab some supplies, let's get some water, and then we're going to head out. But as far as that long-term thinking, the long-range planning, people generally do not fare very well in that. So,
is it possible that they thought that instead of going into the desert, that they would go somewhere else where they would be food and water in a short time?
Maybe.
You know. Was there areas in that country where they could have gone?
Brian, you're better with geography than I am. Any thoughts on that? I know you've looked at that in the past.
They left Egypt and gone directly into Canaan.
Right.
It would not have been nearly the trip that they took.
Yeah.
But maybe some thought they were headed that way.
Yeah, and that could be. And how much knowledge they would have had of surrounding areas too? You'd have to consider that question as well. You know, if you're a slave and you're working under the conditions that they were working, your hours might be so brutal. We see that today. You have somebody who's working two jobs. He's not really thinking about, you know, places over there. It's just trying to get through the daily grind, and that could have been part of it. So there are some details like that that we don't know, but we do know that it didn't take long before they finally started to moan and complain.
They did find shortly after they left some water.
The situation with Mara, and you know, the water was bitter and so forth, and then that got cleaned up. So yes, there was that too. Okay, you also have here under Israel forgets God, the quails. Then you have bread-like substance that was manna. God did provide those things, Exodus 16, and then you have Moses, Exodus 17. He strikes the rock. I have thought over the years that would be some rock. If you're trying to take care of all these people and God provides a fountain of water, that had to be some spring, if you will. And you have here the statement that God, in his providence, provided for his people. Well, that same truth is found in the New Testament. In Hebrews 13, verse 16, you have God's promise there that he will not forsake, he'll always help those who are saints. The people finally reached Sinai. The next paragraph, down there, the southern tip of the Sinai Peninsula, Moses climbs a mountain to receive information from God, the law, which was to guide the Israelites until the time of death. If you look down at the bottom of the page, the bottom right, you'll see a basic chart as far as God's plan. We've talked about the patriarchal age, the time of the fathers, then basically the Mosaic age. People of Israel get out and Moses gives them the law. They start with the Old Testament regime as far as the priests and everything, and then you have the time of the king, Saul, David, Solomon, each reigning for 40 years, the United Kingdom, the Divided Kingdom, the prophets of so and so forth. John the Baptist shows up, and then we get into the New Testament era with Jesus and the apostles. So he's there until the death of Christ. That Old Testament law was designed to be in place. God gave Moses two tables of stone upon which he wrote his own hand, the Ten Commandments. And then how many days after Moses had ascended to the mountain, he returns and finds some problems? 40 days. Well, we talked about numbers in the book of Revelation, so let's go back and briefly again cover the number 40. Let's see if we find that elsewhere in the scriptures. Some of our references will be Genesis 7:4. Who wants to take care of that one? Genesis 7, verse 4, Betty. Lois, if you'll pick up Exodus 24, verse 18. Exodus 24:18. Then from the book of Numbers, chapter 14, verse 33. Numbers 14, verse 33. Who wants it? All right, Maxine, thank you. Numbers 14, 33. Jonah 3, 4. And then I have one more after that. The book of Jonah, third chapter, verse 4. All right, Bonnie. And then let's take a look at the New Testament, Matthew chapter 4, verses 1 and 2. All right, Don. Let's start with Genesis 7, verse 4. Okay, flood's a big deal. And God said it's going to rain. It's going to rain for how long?
40 days.
Well, if you really want to pay attention to the text, you read this passage and you think, well, could God have made it rain 39 days?
Sure.
Yeah, could he have made it rain 40 days or 50 days? Or whatever he wanted. He specifically says 40 days. Now, this is the only passage where we had the number 40. We might not think much about it. But this number begins to appear in other places. The next being Exodus chapter 24, verse 18.
And Moses entered the midst of the cloud as he went up to the mountain. And Moses was on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights.
Okay, same question that we asked concerning Genesis 7. Could God have communicated with Moses effectively and fully in less than 40 days, had he wanted?
Sure.
Sure. But 40 days was the period. Numbers 14, verse 33.
And your sons shall be shepherds in the wilderness 40 years. And bear the brunt of your infidelity until your carcasses are consumed in the wilderness.
Okay, God, because of unfaithfulness, unbelief, God says 40 years of wandering out there in the wilderness. Jonah 3, verse 4.
And Jonah began to enter into the city a day's journey, and he cried and said, yet 40 days, and Nineveh shall be overthrown.
Okay, now this is enough where you have to begin to wonder what's going on with the number 40. I mean, this just is in key, significant Bible events. This number just keeps coming up in different judgments, ways, and just seems kind of peculiar. One more, and then we'll put it together. Matthew 7, 1 and 2.
What did you say again?
The next one is going to be about Jesus being tempted. Matthew 4, verses 1 and 2.
Oh, four.
Don, yeah, Matthew 4, 1 and 2. Don, read that.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Matthew 4.
1 and 2. Uh-huh. First two verses.
Then Jesus was led up in the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And after he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he then became hungry.
Okay. 40. This numeral also appears here. Well, if we're going to get to the number 40, we talked about this a bit from the book of Revelation in that study. We said that sometimes we multiply numbers. If you're going to multiply two figures to get to 40, what two numbers are you going to use? All right, you're going to use 4, and you're going to multiply it by 10. That comes up to 40. Do you remember at least this much from the study in Revelation? What is the number 4 generally associated with in the Bible? Okay, you're headed on the right track. Man's world. You know, we've got 4 seasons. We've got 4
directions.
We've got 4 directions. And then that number 10, what's that associated with in the scriptures? Completeness, entirety, wholeness, and so forth. So when you look at that, you have there some things as far as separation, judgment, struggles, and so forth. And that's really what you begin to see when you start looking, whether it's the flood and the rain and so forth, or whether it's the 40 years. There was going to be a separation. There was going to be a struggle. The 40 years in the wilderness, what did that do as far as generations? Cut these guys off. These guys go in. when you look at the reference in Jonah chapter 3, verse 4. 40 days, and what's going to happen unless you guys repent? There's going to be a separation. You fellows are going to be destroyed. So when you see numbers like this, it's always good to kind of pause and see exactly what is taking place. He was on the mountain for 40 days getting the law. Symbolically, what did that suggest? God says, I brought you out of Egypt. It's now not time to just have fun in the sun. God's saying what? All right. And there's going to be a separation. You are going to be separated because who's your God? I am. And what am I giving you? A law. And I'm going to give you a land. And I'm going to give you a leader. And you are to be distinct. You're to be, if you will, the light to the world in that ancient time. And if you're not willing to be that light, guess what? Yeah, bad news. Anything you want to add or ask? Okay. Bessie, did you start? Okay, I thought you may have flashed a hand. Okay. Let's see here. In that second paragraph under Israel Forgets God, we've got the 40 days after Moses had ascended the mountain, he returned to discover that his brother Aaron had, at the insistence of the people, made a golden calf for them to worship. And this again goes back to what Don had said, how short our memories are and how short the memories of these people were. When you look at the golden calf incident, did that violate any of the Ten Commandments? Yeah, it did. Actually, you have two. It was the first two. You know, no idolatry. And what was the other one that was violated? Thou shalt have no other gods before me. So here's God's list of ten. And not long after they get the information, you violate two out of the ten, which is what, as far as a percentage? It's 20%. That is not a good average. One would have been bad, but two, and especially the first two, it should have just been unthinkable for the people.
Well, technically, they didn't violate it, did they?
Which one?
The Ten Commandments, because they didn't have them yet.
Yeah, they had.
They were coming down.
Yeah, but they hadn't been declared to the people yet.
Yeah, God spoke the Ten Commandments from the mouth.
Yeah.
And then the people said, we're scared. Moses, you go talk to God.
Yeah.
And then come back and tell us what he said.
Yeah.
So they had heard God say those words.
So, yeah, you've got the people, on alert, if you will, that this was a bad thing to do, and yet that's exactly what they did. You've got Moses; he's breaking the tablets of stone, forces the people to drink the water from the ground, or that from the ground up powder of the gold, and then you have here some people die. What number do we find? You've got about 3,000 folks. Die. Well, as we've said before in several classes, and Teresa said they're probably tired of hearing it of it. Maybe you are, but it's in the book. That number 3,000, do you think that was just an arbitrary number of people that died? No, God doesn't do arbitrary things. So here you have Old Testament, God's law, people violate the law, about 3,000 die. Where else do we read about 3,000 people? Yeah. Day of Pentecost, Acts 2, the New Testament church is established. About 3,000 people, they don't die, they live spiritually. Well, isn't that interesting? And somebody says, well, that's just a marvelous coincidence. Well, if that's all that we had as far as parallels between the old and the new, we might say it is a marvelous coincidence. But when you start looking, we've talked before about fulfilled prophecy a couple weeks ago. We compared Joseph to Jesus. And you get kind of a different perception of God when you start looking at how the Old Testament is weaved in and tied in with the New. So it really is amazing. All right, then at the bottom, once more Moses climbed up the mount to commune with God for another 40 days. Tables of stone were renewed. Further portions of God's law for Israel were revealed to Moses. This is also instructive when it comes to the New Testament. Did God just kind of do a data dump? Give Israel everything at once? It was progressive revelation. When we look at the New Testament, do we not find the same thing? Progressive revelation. Acts 2, they get the key stuff. And then as you continue to look at the New Testament books, little by little, you have various writers, a number of authors, giving things, and that revelation is progressive. And then finally, doesn't God say the end? Jude 3, the faith which was given once for all to the saints, 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 16 and 17. We've got God's word that furnishes us completely into every good work, 2 Peter 1, 3. His divine power is granted unto us all things that pertain to life and godliness. So what he did in the old, God is a God of order. He's a logical God, and we find the same thing taking place in the New Testament. Law of Moses. This next heading, it says the law of Moses was to govern Israel for 1,500 years or thereabouts, from the beginning to the death of Jesus Christ. And as I said before, you've got three basic ways to divide the Bible. Other people have offered alternatives, but this is certainly a biblical one, and it's a simple one. There was that patriarchal age before Moses and the stuff that we've been talking about today. And then you get to the, after the patriarchal age, the age of the fathers, the Mosaic age, about 1,500 years. Christian age started about 2,000 years ago. Don't know how long it's going to last. It will end, of course, when Jesus returns. All man's history, all human history, falls into one of these three broad categories. There is not going to be a fourth category. These are going to be it. He mentions then, the next paragraph, the law, which is recorded in portions of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Covered virtually every phase of the life for the Hebrew people, the Israelites. And that's right. It had civil information. There was criminal information. There were judicial regulations that governed the religious activities of the priests and the people and set the moral standards by which they were to live. God gave his people what they needed. And it was not going to be the ultimate way to deal with the problem of sin, but it was the tool that God used for about 1,500 years. And he makes this point. He says, underlying the entire law of Moses were the Ten Commandments. These moral precepts dealt with primarily two things. One, man's duties to God. Two, man's duties to his fellow man. All of them except the fourth commandment. And which one was that? Remember the Sabbath day. Each one of the commandments is found in the new, except this one, in some form, either in the teachings of Jesus or the apostles. He goes on to say, we are to keep these nine. That, of course, is excluding the Sabbath. We now have the first day of the week. We keep these nine, if you will, or keep the principles of the nine, not because they were part of Moses' law, but because they've been made a part of Christ's law. The law of Moses, as such, has been done away with by the death of Christ, Colossians 2:14, Romans 7:1-4. There are just a ton of passages in the New Testament which say the Old Testament has been removed by Christ, taken away by his death, nailed to the cross, and we are not obligated to keep any part of it today. And that Saturday, that Sabbath commandment, is no longer there, but we do find in the New Testament people worshiping on what John referred to as the Lord's Day. He was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day, Revelation chapter 1. Christians came together on the first day of the week. Now, this is pretty basic stuff, but it is important stuff. I can remember being a Christian for about 2 years. There was a fellow that was also a Christian. He wanted to become a preacher. One day he was teaching a Bible class in Austin, Texas, and this question came up. The thrust of the question was, are we under the Old Testament today? And if we're not, then what about these teachings that are Old Testament teachings? And he spent 30 minutes trying to explain. The class really wasn't friendly to him. They kind of put him on the hot seat, and I don't think he got treated very well. But if he ever became a preacher, it probably was a good introduction to teaching a Bible class. But anyway, we do not teach, for example, thou shalt not murder, because it is an Old Testament precept. But we would point, for example, over to Romans 13, and there would be some other passages as well, thou shalt love the neighbor as thyself, which would tell us that murder is wrong. But we would not go back to any of the Ten Commandments and say that they are binding today. But we do have in the New Law, incorporated into the New Law, some things that we find in the Old. So the things that were from the Old that we teach today, they're binding because they're in the New Testament, not because they're part of the Old. Thoughts on that anybody wants to make?
Well, Jesus himself brought over some of those laws into Christian age, didn't he?
And you see the same kind of thing today. For example, if you had some laws for horses and buggies prior to automobiles, don't run anybody off the road. And the government comes in and says, we now have automobiles, and we're going to put new laws on the books as far as our roads. And they say, here are the laws for 2014. We'll use our current time for that. And they say, it's wrong to run somebody off the road. Well, is it wrong to run somebody off the road because that's the way it used to be? Or is it wrong because this is the law that was made in 2014? It's the 2014 law. Now, it might be the same principle. It might even use the same wording. But that was the old law. Now, we would say people are obligated to follow the same rule, not because it was old, but because this is part of the new. And Jesus and the apostles, as you mentioned, did that very thing on some occasions.
Coming from one state into another state, I may not be totally familiar with all the laws in
yes.
Indiana, but I'm still obligated to do those.
Yes.
Even if it's ignorance, you know. There's a lot of the laws that's in Indiana that we had in California, but I'm no longer under the
Yeah, and that's right. You can't say, well, you know, we did it that way in California. Well, you may have, and that still may be a viable way to live out there. Right. But now there are some new rules. So, good illustration. All right, Heman?
In Romans, though, it does tell us that the commandments, you shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, mm-hmm. You shall not steal, all of that is wrapped up in the commandment, love thy neighbor,
yes.
etc. So the commandments are still there. It's just wrapped in a different way.
Yes.
But they're still there.
Yes. But not binding because they're old commandments, but they're part of the new law. But yes. Yes. And I think you can even argue that those are things that whatever God had as far as a law system would have been binding. For example, you think about the murder of Abel by Cain. That was wrong. Now, the Mosaic law was not in place at that time. Certainly the Christian law was not in place, but Genesis 9, I believe it's verse 6, you shed man's blood and, you know, your blood needs to be shed for payment for that. So murder was even wrong there. Stealing, be a little more difficult to pull out. A verse maybe as clear as Genesis 9, but the same principle there. So you do have, you can go back to adultery, you know, what God planned for Adam and Eve and so forth. So yes, you do have those things there. Good point. Okay, let's pick up then. As you look at the law of Moses, there were three annual feasts. The Passover, which was also known as the Unleavened Bread, Feast of Weeks or Pentecost, the Feast of Tabernacles or Ingathering. And these also pointed forward to things in the New Testament, which we're not going to get into today. God commanded the erection of a tabernacle. That was that small portable tent, a place to worship out there as the people were in the wilderness. Eventually, that was replaced with the temple. There were two parts. There was the part which was known as the holy place, and then there was a section that was known as the most holy place. Who could get into the most holy place? All right, you've got the high priest. How often did he go in there? Once a year. He went in there on the Day of Atonement. So that was a very, very special thing. He mentions the offerings. The chief offerings, the main ones, were burnt offerings, which symbolize, you know, dedication to God. You're consuming the whole thing. The peace offerings, a way to express appreciation. Sin offerings, because that was a problem. Then you have the 40 years of wandering. The spies go into Canaan, and that was the same place where Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had lived. God had made a promise back there in the book of Genesis, chapter 15, verses 15 and 16. He said, the sin of the people in the land is not yet full. These people have got to get worse and worse before I'm going to kick them out. And God said that promise will be fulfilled, but you're not going to live to see it. So that time had come, and God's plan was for Israel to remove those folks. It was a land that was flowing with milk and honey. The people that were sent in as far as spies, they thought that, at least the majority, thought that that couldn't be done. Joshua and Caleb, they were faithful. They believed that God would allow them success if they would go in there and try to take it. So because of that unbelief, the 10 unfaithful spies, the people accepted that evil report, and then you have the people of Israel wandering 40 years in the wilderness. We don't have a lot of information, he says, about the rest of that period. Israel, pretty much a nomadic people for quite a while. You do have some stories, Aaron and Miriam, the rebellion there, Moses' sister against Moses, Miriam's leprosy, Numbers chapter 12, these fiery snakes sent among the people, the brazen serpent story, Numbers 21, also a reference to Jesus, Balaam, and Balak. You also have during this time Moses, he hits the rock, spoke to it before, that was okay, smite the rock, water comes out, makes you look big in the eyes of people, and that was not something that God approved of, so what was his punishment? You're not going to enter into the promised land. So he lived to the age of 120, was able to climb Mount Nebo and see what his people were going to get. All right, let's fill in the blanks. We've got about a minute. When the Israelites murmured for food, God gave them quail and manna. Moses went where? Mount Sinai. 40 days, the people worshiped the calf as he came down. The period from the giving of Moses' law to the death of Christ is known as the Mosaic Jewish age, the feasts were the Passover. Good. Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles. The two parts of the tabernacle were the holy place and the first commandment. Three. Fourth commandment. Eight. Eighth commandment. Thou shalt not steal. Verse 15. Verse what for commandment 9? 16. Sixth commandment. All right. Verse 13. And then true or false? Fear ye not, stand still, see the salvation of the Lord. True. Pharaoh's army caught and destroyed many Israelites. False. They died. The children of Israel passed through the sea with water on both sides. True. The Egyptians did not try to follow Israel into the sea. False. When Israel was across, the sea closed up again. True. The people asked Aaron to make them gods to worship. True. As Moses came down from the mountain, he was carrying five tables of stone. False. Aaron tried to place the blame for the idol on the people. True. When Moses asked those on the Lord's side to stand by him, the sons of Levi stood by him. True. The Levites killed 10,000. False. It was about 3,000. True or false? One man was selected as a spy from each tribe of Israel. They brought back peaches, apples, and corn. False. It was grapes, pomegranate, and figs. They told Moses it was a land flowing with milk and honey. True. We have here Gul, the man who said, let's go up and possess it. False. Numbers 13:15. The majority said, and there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of giants, and we were in our own sight as bumblebees. False. What's the answer?
False.